We are all here, or nine of the 10 recommended candidates. Mr. Sorrell, the 4th District nominee or recommendee, will not be here, so we can start reasonably on legislative time, not too. That clock is actually 5 minutes fast, so we're not quite as far behind as you might have thought. My name is Jim Erickson. I'm the chair on the RAC, Regent Candidate Advisory Committee, and the chair of the Orientation Committee. I drew that straw probably because I've been around the Capitol lobbying for 41 years, and this is one, every 2 years I get to sit at this table and hold a gavel. So it's kind of different from the way I usually have to come into these committee rooms. So it's my pleasure. With me today is my colleague on the RAC, Paul Taylor. Mr. Taylor is next door. And Sally Olson is our hardworking staff person who you probably have had some discussions with. If you have questions, she's the better one to ask than me. But Sally staffs the Regent Candidate Advisory Council and does a wonderful job. This is moving toward the, well, our role really as a RAC is kind of over at this moment for this cycle or this rodeo, as it's been referred to, this circus. It's my third involvement. I'm ending my first six-year term and hope to serve again because it's a great honor to do so and to see and meet all of you. So I would first say that we are very pleased. I think I can speak for the entire Regent Candidate Advisory Council that we think the 10 candidates we have recommended this year are without exception as good, if not better, than we've seen in our recent experience. And I frankly am glad that I don't have to make the decision about between each of the two pairs of you because it would be a very hard decision. So that is our job, to send two in each congressional district, two names, either of whom could be a wonderful region. And so there are no losers here. You're all winners at this stage, and you'll all, we hope and encourage you to, whether you're the successful Regent candidate or not, continue your love and contributions to the university, all of which you expressed in your interviews. So thank you very much for being here. Sally has, let me just take you through your package there so you know what's in it. Sally has put together the agenda, which we'll move to in a moment. The memo, a copy of the memo that I sent to you, I'd like to highlight the fact that each of you was assigned or someone asked from our Regent Candidate Advisor Council, we asked them to assign themselves to you and be your kind of guide, if you will. So has everyone been contacted by a Regent Candidate Advisory Council member to offer their assistance? Have you all been, got somebody in with Ms. Bender? No? Okay, I think it was Mayor Breedy that said that he would be your guide. So I think you can contact him. So it's everyone else has been contacted by someone. Very good. So that, I highlighted that. Also, I put the names of three of us who are around the Capitol a good deal, myself and RAC member Bert Mackesy, a former legislator, and, of course, the inimitable Margaret Carlson, who knows almost everything about the university. So feel free to use those numbers to call any of us to ask questions. There's no question that isn't appropriate, and to seek our counsel and advice. But we feel like we've hatched the ducklings now, and now you have to walk on your own. We're honored to be joined here by two, I guess I'd say three sitting regents, but two. Clyde Allen is on our agenda today, retiring after 12 years as a regent from the 7th District. He's been through two of these processes, so he can. And Tom Devine has actually been through two of these processes, Regent Devine. So welcome, Regent Devine and Regent Allen and Regent Beeson. I think with that, those are my preliminary. Oh, I was going to take you through the package. In it, you will find a helpful guide, the Facebook of the legislature, which maybe some of you already picked up already. And a list of the legislators by districts paired up with the senators. I think you'll find that in all the accompanying contact information. That is your target list, I should say. And then in case you are wondering, and you may have not have seen this, also in your package is a list of all the legislators in each of the districts. Just a word about that. Not every legislator listed there is entirely within a legislative district. Some, for example, Representative Carlson, who is the senior legislator in the 3rd District, but only has 3 precincts in the 3rd District. So, but he's still listed here. And what will happen, and I will talk about, I guess I might as well talk about this right now, I have reached out to the senior legislator in each of the 5 congressional districts that are in play. And there's not a consistent pattern, but in most years, most congressional districts meet and hear from the candidates and sometimes endorse them. Sometimes they take a vote, sometimes they don't. So one process that you should consider is probably going to happen, and we will try and be more explicit with you about that so I can answer the questions about whether your district, respective districts, will have such a meeting. That will be a decision of the senior leadership, the senior folks. I should not say that. Representative Pawlowski, who is by far the senior serving legislator in the 1st District, indicated to me yesterday that he does intend to convene a 1st District conversation. So, Ms. Bender and Mr. Simonson, you should be aware of that. And when we find out, and you can talk to them directly when that might be, you should do that. In the 3rd District, Senator Bonhoeff will be here today, and she can speak to that. I've talked to Representative Carlson. He's inclined to do it. It happens more than not. And just going back to the Representative Carlson situation, if they meet, since some legislators are only partially in a district, there's generally an allocation system. So if you're a senator or a House member wholly within a district, you generally get 4 votes. And if you only have a piece of it, as Representative Carlson does, 3 precincts, he'd have 1. It's kind of an allocation. So you have to be fully in the district to have a full vote at that process. But they make their own rules, and they will decide how they want to do that. But that's likely how it's happened somewhat historically. The 4th District, I have reached out to Senators Cohen and Marty, both of whom are the seniors, and they have not indicated to me yet whether they intend to have such a meeting, but they will let us know and we'll let you know. The 6th District, I've reached out to Senator House Member Hackbarth, who is the senior member. He had not thought about it yet, but will get back to me. So can't tell you about that. And in the 7th District, I've talked to have a message in to Senator Stumpf, who is, again, the longest-serving member, and he will talk to his colleagues and decide if there will be a 7th District. So Mr. Anderson and Mr. 7th District.
Right here.
Yes, okay, there we go. Mr. Yost, you should pay attention to that. So that's in your package for your information. And then the policy, the Board of Regents policy responsibilities and all of that you have studied before. With respect to timing, I will say this. The first thing on your agenda, besides your talking individually to legislators, as you are welcome to do, is the Regent Candidate Advisory Forum. Sally, have we passed these out, or do they have them?
You've been contacted by them.
We have some. The Regent Candidate Advisory Forum is on the 28th of January, a week from tomorrow, where the legislators are invited to come. Be a chance to get a mass opportunity to meet people. That's the first thing in the agenda. The next thing probably would be a district resolution or a district caucus, if one is held, and that's up to the leadership about when, how, and where. The next thing on the agenda would be a joint committee of the higher education committees, which by statute must be held by February 28th. We on our committee have recommended, and everybody that's gone through this process has recommended to the leadership that they do that as soon as possible. So you don't have that would be 6 weeks from now. So I think everybody would be well served by having it being less than 6 weeks. And then thereafter, the what's called the joint committee or the joint convention of the entire legislature convenes to ratify what probably would be a slate coming out of the committee, out of the joint committees. Senator Bonhoff and Representative Nornes would be the co-chairs of that. Mr. Allen can explain to you how that works, having gone through it, or Mr. Devine. But that's the more formal process, and they generally come up with a slate, and the slate generally is approved by the whole body, but not always. That's a short summary of how this process will go forward. I also ask that you keep, as you go through it, think about it, and then your guide from the RAC has been asked to follow up with you afterwards and get feedback from you, whether you were successful or... And there's a definition of success. Maybe not being elected a regent is successful, too. It's a big job. There are those who said, boy, I'm glad that didn't happen. So we appreciate you. So your definition of success will be made by you. But please pay some attention to as you go through this process and how we can improve it, and you will be asked specifically by the individual that's going to contact you to give us feedback. Mr. Taylor, any comments that you'd like to add? And
not at all. Thanks for the invite, but you did just fine.
Well, flashes. You know, we couldn't have done this before. We just get a notice that the Joint Committee meeting of the Higher Education and Workforce Development and the House Committee on Higher Education is now scheduled for February 10th, Tuesday, February 10th at 4 p.m. That is the joint meeting of those two committees, which I referred to. So they're moving the ball a couple weeks ahead of their 3 weeks ahead of their deadline. So you should all be very appreciative of that. I want to tell you that. So did I say that correctly? February? What day of the week is that?
Tuesday,
February 10th, 4 p.m. in room
5.
Room 5, which is directly down. So that's your time frame. I now will call to the... Do you want to speak from there, Regent?
Sure.
Or do you want to use the table?
Fine.
Okay. Regent Clyde Allen is our first agenda item, and he's going to, as it says, how to promote your candidacy, and then we'll take questions and answers after that.
Thank you very much, Jim. Just a couple of things. You mentioned you've been around here a long time, lobbying and everything. You have to be careful what you say in these halls. It can sometimes come back to haunt you. We started a finance committee meeting of the board one time, and the vice president for finance, Mr. Fitzenreiter, said, well, we have a little video clip we have to show first. And it turned out to be a clip of me testifying in the legislature back in about 1973. And somebody had picked it up at a National Council of Legislators training session in Colorado and brought it back with them, and here they played it on me. So, and I was wearing a suit that was maybe fitting for the time, but it was one that I remember former Speaker of the House Irv Anderson used to refer to as the Commissioner's Mississippi Gambling Suit. So be careful what you say here, especially if it's going to be recorded or televideoed. Second thing I'd say is that, you know, half of you, I think, are on the venture on the edge of one of the greatest ventures of your life. I've been on the board 12 years now. I'm not ready at all to give it up, but I believe in turnover, so I'm comfortable doing it. But it has been one of the greatest experiences of my life, and I think you will find it the same. So campaign hard for that position, whatever you do. I understand you wanted a few practical things, so I'm going to go through some things here and leave plenty of time for questions and answers. Logistics. Some of you are used to walking around these halls and parking and what have you, but some of you aren't. So get your logistics down. Find out how to set up appointments with candidates. That will help. But leave time between appointments. Don't make them close back-to-back with one legislator here and another one over here. Sometimes they run late. They have very busy lives. People interrupt them, catch them in the hallways, as you will do lobbying. And so leave some time between appointments. But set up appointments. They're very helpful. But it's very difficult to get around to everybody just on an appointment basis if you're talking about 201 legislators. So kind of haunt these halls. Walk around these halls and run into people. Look at the committee hearing schedules and find out where you can bump into some of the legislators you need to catch. Some of them you may have already met with, and you can say, did you have any thoughts after I left? Others you haven't met with yet, you might be able to cover the meeting right there. That might be all they want to talk about. So haunt the hallways. That's another way of getting around to 201 people. And some of the folks like Jim who've done a lot more lobbying may want to add or contradict what I'm saying, but that was my style anyway. Get help from friends. Some of you know your own local legislators very well. And hopefully you've got a commitment from them, but if not, maybe you can find some other legislators or friends who've got good ins with various legislators. Take advantage of those friendships. Particularly if you've got your own legislator willing to support you, you can say to them, you know, would you give me a heads up on others who you think I need to do some more work with? That can be a great benefit. And even if you don't hear from them, you might be wise to check back with them now and then and say, what are you hearing? What's up? How am I doing with the meetings I've had? Latch on to a lot of the material which has already been supplied in your package. I usually have a packet of this material around even these days when I'm not running for anything. But get to know what committees your legislators are on. You walk into a meeting and introduce yourself, and it might be nice to say, gee, I see on Wednesday's hearing at such and such a committee you've got a big bill up, and you maybe want to talk a little about that. Small talk, but just make sure that you get to know the legislators. Even your own local ones, who you do know firsthand, face-to-face, you may not know what their daily lives are like here. So get to understand that, because they have very busy lives here. I'd also see if you can't find out what some of their particular interests are with regard to the university. Some of them are strong supporters, not without criticism, but they're still strong supporters. Others are kind of critical without being terribly strong supporters. And some of them maybe have lots of other things on their mind. So find out what the interests are, and the level of interest, the intensity of it on the part of your legislators. That's very, very helpful. One way you can get to know some of your legislators better, and I don't know how many of you pay attention to it, but public TV does a wonderful job in this state of broadcasting legislative hearings and floor sessions. My wife gets very tired of me having those on sometimes, but I have them on in the background while I'm reading or doing something else. It's a great service. Make sure you're watching for all the articles on higher ed. A lot of material on higher ed these days in the papers. You can find more of it in things like the Higher Education Chronicle, which is a subscription paper, but you can probably latch on to some of those articles. I don't know whether we send any of those out to candidates or not from the board office, Brian, but that's something we can talk about. You can't be expected to know all there is to know about higher ed. I've been on there 12 years, and all kinds of things I don't know about. And as brand new folks at it, you're not expected, even by the legislature, to have all the answers. But they will expect you to have the interest. They will expect you to be starting that process of learning. And so watch for those articles, be up on the issues. You don't want to get caught with some legislating. What are you saying to you? What do you think about this item? And it's a big item, and you haven't heard of it. You might not have the answer yet. You might not have an opinion. But you probably ought to know that there are some issues there. So begin to pay a lot of attention to that material. Talking about the Education Committee hearings, there you can probably expect some pointed questions. And what do you do when you get some pointed questions where you don't have all the information yet? Again, it's a matter of knowing that there are issues there and of convincing that committee that you have a very analytical way of going about things and that you have a real interest in digging into some of these higher education issues. I think the key word is you're not trying to sell the legislature at this point that you know all there is to know about higher education, because you can't do that. You won't. You won't ever. But your goal is to convince them that you are going to dig into a lot of these issues that worry them. I think one of the things that worries them most is they look at the money they're pouring into higher education, and they wonder, how do we really know if it's being well spent? How do we know if we're getting the quality? How do we know if we're getting the breadth of education that's needed? So they're looking for people who are going to be their proponents on the Board of Higher Education to make sure that we get the most out of the university. That's the one thing you can tell them, is that you are intense, you're analytical, you're open to ideas, you're questioning, and if you can do all of that, you should be in pretty good stead. A word about the caucus meetings. I got caught on one of those my first time around, because I was running at the time against Roger Moe, who was the recently retired majority leader of the Senate. And up in his district, he had some strong support among the members of the legislature who were in that caucus. And so the question I got was, will you abide by the recommendation of this caucus? And I thought that was part of the regular process. And so I said, yes, I will. Well, a lot of people came up to me afterwards and said, wait a minute, you don't have to abide by that. You can keep up your own campaigning. So I got caught on that. So you just be careful of the questions that come. That was intended to kind of set up my opponent for a little better political situation. And what I should have said was, well, I don't think that's part of the normal process. I think the legislative vote itself is the final step, and I will keep campaigning until then. But I didn't know enough to say that. That caucus happened before the Joint Legislative Committee hearing, and I got asked about it again, and they said, I thought you said you wouldn't run if you didn't get the vote of the caucus. And I said, well, I have found out since that that's not an official part of the process. It's informational, but not part of the process, and so I intend to keep running. And apparently that went over okay, because I ended up winning. But be careful of the caucus in particular. It can get a little political. I was asked earlier today, well, how political is the process? That's a difficult one to answer. I'll give you two examples. When I ran, it was fairly political because the Republicans had a slight majority when you put the House and Senate together. And there just didn't seem to be a way they were going to elect the former majority leader of the Senate, of the DFL Senate caucus. And so there was some politics there. But after I got on the board, I have not seen one bit of partisan politics in the operation of the Board of Regents. Doesn't mean you give up your political philosophy necessarily on how you look at various issues and things. But there is literally no partisan politics. The second time I ran was a little different lesson. The Senate majority, DFL majority at the time, said, we've got three incumbent regents up for election. Doesn't matter whether they came as Republicans or what. If they've been good regents, we're going to support the re-election. And so they did. And just as a sidelight, I ended up running against Roger Moe's niece that time. I don't know who they're going to run next time I run for something. but the Senate said, we don't care what the background is in the history of partisan politics. If they've been good regents, we're going to get them reelected, and they did. So, yes, there can be some politics, but it can be both good and bad, and you take it, and you're aware of it, and watch out for it. I think I'm going to stop there and leave questions.
Thank you, Regent. Perhaps since Regent Devine has joined us, do you have any additional remarks, having gone through this process also twice? We'll welcome your comments.
Well, I wasn't really called upon to do anything. The only comment that I would make that was helpful to me in the process is every legislator is a voter.
And so oftentimes, politically, you're advised maybe to focus your efforts just within your district, you know, relative to the caucus endorsement process. But it really, when you get all done going through the process, it's really the legislature that's making a judgment about you as an individual, whether you're Republican or a Democrat. It's not to say it doesn't have some element of political overtone in it, but what they're really looking for is your interest and your qualifications to be a regent. And at the end of the day, that's really what you want to herald out, is why you're doing this and why you're putting yourself through the process, and your dedication to doing the job after you are elected. That it's not just something that you're checking off in the resume of life, but rather you really want to make a contribution to the University of Minnesota, and you're committed to doing all of the tasks that go with it, which are formidable, as most of you, I'm sure, are aware. That's really the only other comment that I would make.
Just to add one thing, you know. Some of us, had the experience of going through legislative hearings over and over again before we ever got to this process. And so it wasn't particularly worrisome to go through another set of legislative hearings. Some of you may be brand new to that process, but I think you have to keep in mind that your credentials have gotten you this far, and they adequately prepare you for going through the rest of that process. You shouldn't have any fear at all of sitting down with the legislators individually or in hearings and speaking from the strength that is already evident in your credentials. So good luck to each and every one of you.
Thank you. Now we'll open it up for questions. I'd like to recognize Chair Bud Nornes, who has just joined us, the chair of the House Higher Education Committee. Representative Nornes, would you like to join us at the table here? Please, why don't you come on up and sit by Regent Devine. We just announced that that the joint committee of the two committees is February 10th, so we just put the thank you, and I think the candidates all around the table, thank you for doing that sooner rather than later.
You picked my wife's wedding anniversary.
All right.
No way I can't forget it. So.
In any case, we advise them, and we appreciate that. I'll open it for questions. This is a wonderful chance to talk to two people who have gone through this process and answer the questions. There's no questions that aren't appropriate or that are inappropriate. I would just like you to practice what will happen in front of the joint committee with Chairman Nordis as a co-chair. The practice and the history around here is that everything goes through the chair. So you always would want to raise your hand or ask Mr. Chairman. Then I'll act as the chairman. I'll recognize you, and then you can ask your question. And it, some people that haven't come into this process don't quite realize that. And it'll be good practice for when you're sitting in front of, 40 people? How many on your committee, Representative?
I haven't counted them, but it's pretty close.
Something maybe 40 on 20 on yours, and
I think so.
18. So it'll be close to 40 people in the room that you'll have to be performing in front of, if you will. So the floor is open for your questions. And somebody ask the first one. Just show us. Yes, Mr. Taylor, I called on you before.
Thank you, Chair Erickson. I want to amplify something that Regent Allen started with, and that's flexibility in the scheduling of appointments. And I want to give you a personal example that's less than 2 hours old. I was here at 12:15 to meet with Representative Sarah Anderson from Plymouth to talk about a new piece of legislation, the MinVest equity crowdfunding legislation. I got there a few minutes early. Her LA, Kelly Johnson, said, "Mr. Taylor, I'm sorry, but they've called the session of the House for 12 noon. You've got a meeting here in this room at 1 o'clock. Why don't we walk over together to the Capitol, and I will get Representative Anderson off the floor, and then she will spend as much time with you as she can before she has to go back into the session." So that's exactly what happened. And so, I mean, for me, thinking about my 30 years with International Multifoods and Fortune 500, I mean, I was a big shot, and people always should be there on time. If I had acted that way today, Sarah Anderson would never call me back. So I just wanted to let you know from personal experience, that's how it works. and you have to be willing to be flexible. These people feel very strongly about the importance of the University of Minnesota. They want to get to know who you are, and once again, to reinforce what Regent Allen has said, that if you understand that environment, that will help you go a long way.
Thank you. Actually, before we go to the questions, I'd like to do something I intended to do to begin with. All of you, the nine of you that are here, are really kind of a band of brothers and sisters now. You're going to go through a common experience, and you should actually get to know a little bit more about each other. So I'd like to go around the room and ask each of you just briefly talk about where you're from, what your background is, and anything else you want to say in maybe a one-minute introduction to the rest of your colleagues here. Mr. Yost?
Well, you caught me off guard. I'm used to going in alphabetical order.
Well, that was intentional.
I'm a farmer from a little town in western Minnesota called Burdock, which is about 120 miles west of here. Graduated the University of Minnesota, done a number of things in agriculture, and had a midlife crisis and spent 5 years in Washington, D.C., where I ran two federal agencies, one that had a broad domestic agenda and one that had an international agenda.
Dr. Bender?
Thank you. My name is Claire Bender, from Rochester, Minnesota. I was born in rural Nebraska years ago, but I ended up in Rochester in 1975 and have been there ever since. I just recently retired as a staff physician, as a diagnostic radiologist, and I've had the opportunity to serve not only in my clinical practice, but also a variety of educational duties. Most recently, I was one of the five deans of all of the allied health programs of the Mayo Institution. I also have some experience in clinical research, and I had a wide variety of administrative roles while I was a physician. So I am enjoying the retirement from a 200% FTE job. Thank you, Jim.
Ms. Prawl?
I'm Paula Prawl. I live in Medina or Long Lake, depending on whether you're going through my post office or not. And I am currently a director at Varde Partners, which is an investment fund in the Twin Cities. I spent a little over 10 years at Best Buy as the Senior Vice President of Communications, Public Affairs, and Social Responsibility, and another decade at Honeywell doing a very similar job. I started my career in higher ed in student affairs, first at University of Iowa, and then at Wheaton College in Massachusetts. I moved to Minnesota to go to graduate school at the U. I'm a graduate of the Humphrey School, and I'm very excited about this opportunity.
Today you're just Mr. Beeson.
It's better than saying, hey, you. Well, my name's Rick Beeson. I've been a resident of St. Paul for the last 35 years. I always describe St. Paul, our largest suburb of St. Paul is Minneapolis, so we need to get a little in there. I've been a community bank president for 20 years, still working full-time at the bank. Before that, I was a city economic development director under Mayor George Latimer, and was elected to the board in 2009. I came in with Regent Allen, Regent Corvinus, and Regent Simmons, all of whom, of course, are stepping off and became chair a year and a half ago. And I'm glad to make all your acquaintance and look forward to working with all of you during the campaign coming up and serving when we're done.
Mr. Shue.
I'm Michael Shue. I know it's spelled funny. It's something that happened when my dad came over from China, and they told him that's how you spell your name. So now I think they spell it X-U also, which is a different way. I didn't really catch on to that right away. But I grew up in Ames, Iowa, where my dad was a professor, and ended up coming to the University of Minnesota, where he had started, and he was a professor of aerospace engineering. And also worked at the Rosemont Aerospace Laboratories before he went down to Iowa State to start the graduate school. I came up here after getting interested in computers. The university was number four in the country in terms of electrical engineering. So I decided this was a good place to start out. I ended up doing a stint in management consulting down in Chicago, and ended up moving back here with my wife. Started a couple companies up here, and mostly in the technology field. And now I'm looking forward to getting to know all the legislature in town here. So.
Dr. Belzer.
Thank you. My name is Mick, is my nickname name. And I grew up in South Minneapolis, went to the University of Minnesota as an undergrad, and went to medical school at the University of Minnesota, as did my father, who was also a physician. I trained in internal medicine in Chapel Hill, North Carolina, and hematology oncology at UCLA, and for a variety of reasons landed back at the Safety Net Hospital in downtown Minneapolis, Hennepin County Medical Center, because it was a good fit for my interests and skill set. I practice hematology oncology, but for the past 25 years I've been the chief medical officer and medical director at Hennepin County Medical Center, which is an administrative position, and also serve as an associate dean at the medical school at the university, looking after their 100 medical students, their 100 residents, and 300 faculty. So I'm very familiar with the academic health center. I've had a lot of experience on boards nationally and locally, and this is going to be my retirement year. And so I'm looking for a challenge with an institution and with a group of bright people that will be very exciting for me.
Thank you. Before I go to this side of the room, I'd like to recognize that we've been joined by Chair Terry Bonhoff from the Senate Higher Education Committee and a member of the RAC Board, and she'll speak to us later. Welcome,
Senator.
Thank
you very much.
Mr. Anderson.
Thomas Anderson, Alexandria, Minnesota. Born and raised there, lived there my whole life. I went to the University of Minnesota, graduated from mortuary science in the smallest department of the University of Minnesota. I think it still is, about 60 students. Been involved in mortuary science business my whole life. Also been very involved as in ownership of and operations in professional and collegiate basketball worlds. I think I've had every volunteer job a person could have in Alexandria, Minnesota. I'm very dedicated to the University of Minnesota, and I'd like to contribute my talents to that at this time. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Larraway.
I'm Steve Larraway. I'm from St. Cloud. Where I own my own firm, Larraway Financial Advisors. We're a registered investment advisory firm. Professionally or education-wise, I'm an attorney, a CPA, a certified financial planner, chartered financial consultant. I did not graduate from the U, but I've had numerous family members that have, including my daughter graduated in May. I've been very active with volunteer work. Primarily, the two main organizations have been the Boy Scouts. I'm an Eagle Scout. I've been recognized as Silver Beaver and Silver Antelope, which are council and region awards, as well as the last 10 years I've been involved with the St. Cloud Hospital, gone to many governments conferences for healthcare. The last 3 years, up until July 1, I served as chair of the board there. And now I went from that onto the Centrum Care Board. So I'm very excited about this as well.
Dr. Simonson.
I'm Randy Simonson. I live in Worthington, Minnesota. I have a doctorate in veterinary microbiology from the University of Minnesota here. After completing that, I immediately went into the animal health industry, starting with a multinational in Iowa. I was there for a few years and then had the opportunity to join a startup company in Worthington. We grew that company quite large, and then we sold that company. I stayed on with the acquiring company for a while. We then came back and joined my partners. We started another company. We recently sold that about 2 years ago. Both of those companies are still in Worthington with employees, multinational companies. I've recently just started a third animal health company, and I'm very passionate about the university. It's meant a lot to me. My son went to medical school there. He's a radiologist, Dr. Bender, and did all his work here at Minnesota. And then my daughter did her undergraduate here as a history, and she's a PhD student today in New York. My wife and I are very committed. We've had the opportunity to help start a scholarship here in the name of my major professor. I serve on a number of committees, curriculum committees, so on and so forth. So we've done a lot of volunteer work. One of my biggest passions right now, Worthington is a very diverse community. We have something like 52 different dialects. Over half the children in our grade schools are English second language. I'm very interested in how we can help them as our changing demographics and how the University of Minnesota may play a role in that. I have some ideas. I'm a person who education has meant much to me. I got out of high school with a 1.7, barely got into college and immediately flunked out. And so education has been a big part of my life, and I see a lot of these students of our people in the English second language that need a help see in a direction. I think the university can play a role in that. Thank you.
Thank you all, and as you can see, that's why we at the RAC are so pleased with all 9, 10 of you that are competing are of the highest quality caliber, and you can see that in the descriptions of your backgrounds. I'm going to make one request now if there are direct specific questions for our two regents, and then I'll move on to the other items, but there will be time for questions and answers afterwards, too. So are there any immediate questions at this stage of any candidates? Mr. Simonson, and I should recognize Ms. Josephson has just joined us, another member of the Regent Candidate Advisory Council.
Dr. Simonson. Regent Allen, you mentioned a couple of sources, I think, about getting information. You talked about public TV that you watch all the time and higher ed chronicles. Are there any other sources? That's one of the biggest things for me is trying to find out where the hot topics are. Certainly I read the press. I know a lot about what's going on at the medical school. I have some other ideas. I've read the President Kaler's fiscal year budget report and some of that stuff, but I always find myself, I was questioned today about some things I was caught cold on. So.
Well, one of the best resources is the website at the university itself. The Regents' board meetings are all archived, along with the hearings themselves and the handout material. And that will cover an awful lot of those issues for you and tip you off to things you may want to look even further into.
Good. Thank you.
Other questions? We'll defer them till the next round. And I'm going to, with your permission, Mr. Steves, I'm going to call on, because I'm not sure how long they could stay, call on our next item 4, the legislative perspective, first Senator Bonhoff, and then Senator Bonhoff, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Do you want me to sit here versus having us
Where
there?
Would you like to be, Senator?
If you don't mind that our chairs are so low over here.
Well, your choice.
I think I'll stand up. Thank you.
In this building, the chairs always get to decide.
Thank you. Well, first of all, thank you to each and every person around this table who is here as a candidate. Because as you know, we had a little bit of a departure, and we had myself and Senator Pratt attend all of the interviews. And so it was tough for the House. We're in the middle of a four-year session or four-year term, and so we weren't just starting, and so we were able to make that work. It was harder for the House, who was just starting another term. But I cannot tell you how impressed and in awe I am of who you are. And so it was actually our recommendation that rather than in the past, sometimes there's been more than just two candidates put forward. We wanted to make sure to give the best shot to the votes of the RCAC. And so if we put three, we thought we'd have less of a chance of doing that. So both Senator Pratt and I asked RCAC, please just give it. And by law, they have to give at least two. So we did request. And I believe for that, you were in the room also, Chair Nornes, and also concurred with that recommendation. So that's why, we wish that you didn't have to go from office to office to office. And we still will continue to reform this process so that we can move away from that. But unfortunately, given that every member of the legislature, every member has an equal vote. And so without having you get as much face time from every member as possible, then really there's you know, you don't have your best shot. And so I apologize that it's tedious. And another change we are making this time is we have set our joint committee, Representative Nornes and myself, and it's earlier. Now, on the one hand, you could say, well, that doesn't give you as much time, but you all have the same time. And so I think personally, it's a benefit. So the joint committee will be on February 10th. Also new this year is we've got this alumni-sponsored forum, and the entire legislature is invited to come to that. I personally have a question about how that's going to be run, and so we'll work, Sally, where's Sally? Right there, thank you, sorry. We'll work with you, and I don't know, maybe Lois and Jim, you'll be talking to them too, but I would hope that we give our candidates a long enough time. I know when I'm in these public forums and they tell me I've got 2 minutes, I mean, you can't make yourself known in 2 minutes. You know, for some of us who are good talkers, it actually works to the opposite effect, because then you get so nervous about your 2 minutes that you really can't say anything. So that's my thing. So I would just hope that you get a chance, because everybody's style is different, and so I just want to make sure that you have an opportunity to present yourself and your candidacy in the way that works for you. So you've got the 28th, that's the forum. Then, you know, you will be going from office to office meeting who you can meet with. And Representative Nornes and I did just touch base, and I know, Jim, you called me on the weekend. The congressional districts will be convening as, you know, joint House, Senate, Republicans, Democrats group to make their choices. So let me just stop for a minute and pause and ask this question. In the past, do the candidates who have been put forward also then come before that joint? So is that correct?
It's Chair Romanoff, it's been a spotty, sometimes yes, sometimes no, sometimes they just hear and don't vote, sometimes they vote. It's really up to the leadership, and I've reached out to each of the senior members and the leaders like yourself in each caucus. I told them that I know that Representative Pulaski told me the first district would convene. We don't know when.
Yeah.
From the second,
for example,
from your district, I believe you intend to have it in the third district, correct?
Right, and it won't be. It will be the person who also has the largest share of representation and is the most senior.
Yes. For example, I also advised to them that some people are split. For example, Representative Carlson, who is the most senior, only has three precincts. So the leadership will come together and decide what the format in each of them are. And I don't know that there's a cookie cutter. It's been different.
We've discussed it. But that, none of you need to worry about that. What you need to know about that is it's most important for you to use your time with two groups. One is the people on the higher ed committees in both the House and the Senate, because ultimately they will put forward the slate. We will, us higher ed committee folks, pay special attention to, although make no promises, to honor the recommendations from the congressional districts. And so the two groups of people that you want to get to know the most are the people who are in the congressional district, as well as the higher ed committee participants. And I know my office is happy to help with making sure you have all that information. I suspect RCAC will be the main contact for that. That's probably a smarter way to go. So once those congressional committees meet, they'll send that information back to us. And then the final time where we will convene and make our choices, and you will have a chance to come before our joint committee to meet with the committee as a whole on that February 10th. We will vote at that time, and then the next step will be the formal legislative process. There's always a possibility that things come from the floor, a nominee is made, and then that complicates the voting because, you know, then members do what they do with those nominations. We can't control that, but it is our hope to be able to support both what the RCAC did and then what the Joint Committee does. So that's, you know, really just the other thing for me to say is why I'm involved in it. I'm involved in it because I do have a vision that the University of Minnesota leads the world, that we are not just nation leading, but we are globally leading. And I think in many areas we are, but I think there's room to grow. And I think that's true across the entire higher ed sphere. This is a time of just immense change and transformation going on around higher education. And so who we need at the table are the visionary leaders who can point and say, this is where we're going, as well as the risk managers to say, well, you may want to go there, but this is riskier than others. And then you want to have people who are really good at knowing how to make strategy happen. So I say that just in the broadest brush of terms. There is no one person or one type that should be on that regent ultimate group, but a combination of skills, strengths, qualities, and abilities that can, in fact, deliver on that mission. And as higher ed chair, that is my ultimate and profound commitment, is that I provide as much leadership from a legislative perspective as possible so that we take advantage of what we all think to help deliver that for the university. So any questions for me before? And by the way, Representative Nordes and I have not worked together, but I can tell you from the short time that we are committed to work in partnership, and I think you'll find that that to be true.
Questions of Chair Bonoff? Okay. Chair Nordes?
I'm going to choose to sit here, if that's all right.
See, different styles.
We can make decisions, that's for sure. Senator Bonoff really covered everything that you need to hear. I've been involved, I think almost every year I've been in the legislature, every time we've gone through this, and I think I've been a part of it, and it's always been frustrating to everybody involved. I mean, that's, I have to apologize, because we've been trying to make it better for a long time. And we've made a few strides. I think we've made some things that are more workable. But I, again, applaud all of you that have put forward the effort and willingness to serve in this capacity, because it's a real sacrifice, just this part of it, in fact. Not to, you know, eventually, when you're seated on the board, it's, that's really a commitment. But I have been very impressed over the years with the Board of Regents that we've you know, had dealings with. My oldest is a graduate of the university and of the Carlson Business School, and I have high regard for the school just because of him. Someday he'll take care of me, I think. So, other than that, I think the process is pretty well set. I think we've, except for these caucuses that the districts will have to set, I think they determine when they meet. And that's really the other challenge down here. I haven't met a legislator yet who has said, boy, I've got some spare time. Finding time when everybody can get together, and I'm thinking of the 7th district, which is large, and the number of, you know, folks that potentially could be a part of that caucus, to find a time when they could all be there, or at least the majority of them. That'll be our next challenge, I think. And but it'll work out, and you'll all be glad when it's over. So that's about all I can add, unless there's some questions specifically of me. I did appreciate being a little part of that selection process. I wish I could have been more involved as we got further into it, but you know, there's things you can do, and then you realize there are other things you just can't do. So I came to the realization I can't, and that's the way it worked out. So,
thank you, Chair Nordes. I'd like to recognize that another regent has joined us, Regent Peggy Lucas from the 5th District. Welcome, Regent Lucas. Thank you for being here. Before we move on to Brian Steeves, I might just embellish a couple things said by the chairs. Yes, Senator Bonoff says there are 201 folks that vote in the Joint Convention, which is the ultimate decision. 100 of them are from one party and 101 from the other party, just FYI. I think you could analogize it in the political context to the district conventions or the district caucuses that get together to recommend somebody is not unlike an endorsement convention in the political process. They can get your endorsement. Then you go to the primary, which is not unlike the joint committee, which puts the slate forward, and then you go to the general election, which is 102 or 201 folks voting. So if you kind of think about it that way in the political context, I think that will put this process in context. And the other thing I'd say is, yes, there are 201 legislators that are all equal, as Senator Bonoff said, but some are more equal than others. So she's given you some good advice about where you might concentrate your efforts. And I would start to embellish on Regent Allen's first comment, I think, get your own legislators, your own senator, and your own representative to support you. You start there, and they can be the guides, guideposts. So with those things in mind, that's my additional perspective. And now I'll turn it over to Executive Director Steves. Would you please take the podium? And Brian, bring us your message from the region's or the board perspective. Thank you, Chair Bonoff. Are you going to join us? Thank you. Yes.
All right. Well, thank you for having me. My name is Brian Steves, and I serve the Board of Regents as its executive director. And it's really a privilege to serve in that role, and it's a privilege to be here and start to visit with folks that I'll be working very closely with in the future. So I appreciate that opportunity. You know, the interesting thing, we talk a little bit about this process, and I think having not been through it myself, but having observed it and having heard a lot of stories about it, it's one of those things that it is a little bit wild, and it can be a little woolly during the whole thing. But I've spoken with a lot of colleagues in states all across the country, and I have not found a process that I think is better than Minnesota's process yet. I think that many states use a gubernatorial appointment process, which results in a certain type of board. I think that there's states that also have their higher education boards elected on the public ballot. That leads to a whole different set of circumstances and different type of board members. And I have not found any that actually have the legislature elect their board members as Minnesota does. And I still contend that we have the best process, despite, you know, having shortcomings. I think that it is the best process because it results in exactly what you heard from Senator Bonoff. It results in a very diverse board, a board that has many different perspectives, that has many different life experiences, and really results in a board that then can function as a cohesive team in advancing the university. So that's just some comments on the process itself. I wanted to talk a little bit about a few things, and some of the thrust of my comments will help you think ahead toward should you be successful in this process. But I'm hoping that you'll find it valuable now as well. When I think about the role of the board, many of you have board experience. You've been on boards. But I guarantee you, whatever boards you've been on have not been like the Board of Regents, because I've encountered a lot of people who've been on boards, and I think they would agree that the Board of Regents is unique in many ways. It's unique as a public board. Many of you have been on private boards. A public board is different. You will operate under the open meeting law. You will operate under the Data Practices Act. You will operate in public. In fact, if you'd like to watch any of the board meetings, they're all archived on our YouTube channel. And so you can go back and look at what regents have said at different meetings, and you can watch that, and you can live stream watch it on your desktop as well. So it's different in a lot of ways. But I think that there are things that it shares with other boards, and there are things, there's often times where you can kind of go to the textbook, or you can go to look at what governing boards do, and you can look at governance. And I think I like to boil it down to four things. So board members that are really effective and boards that are really effective, they ask four questions, and they think about four questions all the time. Their first question is, where do we want the organization to go? So in other words, they think about the mission and the vision. They think about the future. They're forward-looking. They're always keeping that in mind. Where do we want the organization to go? The second is, who is responsible for getting us there? And this seems like a simple question, but it's really a complicated question, because this is the definition of what are the authorities we're reserving to ourselves as a board, and what are we delegating? And I mean truly delegating. What are we investing the president and his team with in terms of responsibility, and how are we dividing that out? Who's responsible for getting us there? A board that keeps too much of that close to them is a board that probably is going to end up with some problems. The third one is, how will we measure progress? And this is one that's important. So you can't just have the vision and the mission and the responsibilities laid out. You do have to figure out how you will know whether or not you're making progress. And the final one is, what are the risks? A board, more than most in the organization, needs to be that the body that is thinking about the risks, that is thinking about what is going to take us off path, what will potentially get in the way of us being successful with this, with the vision we've laid out. And so when I think about a board, I think about those things. Those are the four things that a really effective board member and a really effective board are always thinking about. And so when you get those questions about different topics or different items that are in the higher ed press or things like that, and there are many. I mean, there, Regent Allen is right. You could study higher education for decades and not be able to answer every question you might get and encounter. But what I'd say is, fall back on these kinds of things. Think about it in this framework. Think about, well, what would be the vision? How would the accountabilities play out? How would we measure progress towards something like that? What would the risks maybe be? When you think about it that way, you start to think like a board member. And you start to think like a board member, your answers will start to be more like a board member. And the more I can get you to act like a board member now, the more you'll be like a board member later. So anyway, that's when I think about the role of a board. I just wanted to share some thoughts on the role of a board. A couple other things that you'll need to think about, and this goes to some of the public nature of the Board of Regents. The board has a policy, and I just want to read this one little quote from it, and it says, "Regents are expected to put aside parochial interests, keeping the welfare of the entire university, not just a particular constituency, at all times paramount." This is so important. This is important as you go through this process, because even though you're running in a district, you will not represent that district on the Board of Regents. You will be a regent for the entire state of Minnesota. And that's important to always keep in mind. Likewise, you will not be the regent who went through a particular program and is going to carry the water for that program at the board. You're not going to be the regent who, you know, fill in whatever kind of constituency you could possibly fill in. That is not your role on the board. Your role is to be thinking about the entire institution, to keep the entirety of the operation paramount all the time. And so I think about that a lot. The board has also has some very specific and high standards related to conflicts of interest. And I've mentioned this to the Regent Candidate Advisory Council. I know they were well versed in this. They asked a lot of probing questions on these topics. But one of the things you'll need to do if elected to the board is file annual financial disclosure statements. In addition to that, in addition to some of the very concrete, like financial disclosures or employment-related disclosures that you'll need to make in order to determine any potential conflicts, I would say that the standard is just very high for any kind of an appearance of a conflict. And when I say that, one of the things that we would do, for instance, is talk about any volunteer affiliations you may have with particular segments of the university. Some regents have come to the board and have a long-standing service or continuing service on a dean's advisory committee, unpaid, volunteer kind of assignment. Well, that'd be the kind of thing I'd ask you to resign, because I don't want to have any regent viewed as being overly favoring toward a particular college, or have other colleges saying, well, why does that dean get to have a regent on his board, and I don't get to have, you know, why, where's my regent, why don't I get one? But you can kind of see the thinking that goes into this. And so I would say that we really do consider a lot of factors when we're trying to ensure that the board is able to exercise and carry out that language that I read, that where you're always keeping the entire university's interests paramount. So those are some of the comments there. I'm happy to pause there. I want to talk a little bit about, you know, should you be successful? There's a few key dates and some things I want to mention, but I'd be happy to answer any questions specifically about anything that I've talked about.
Other questions? Mr. Steves.
Yeah, Mr. Chair. Dr. Steves. How much of a staff do you have? How large of a staff? So I'm used to facing complicated issues where staff does a lot of work gathering their research information, variety of topics for us, so we'll be for meetings. Do you have much of a staff that you work with?
The structure, Mr. Chair and Mr. Belzer, the structure of the university is such that the board is supported by a small staff. So it's myself and five other people, one of whom is part-time, that work directly for the board. And so we are the staff to the Board of Regents. And we certainly provide advice. We provide feedback on governance and how to bring items to the board. But we also serve as that liaison and that interface, so that if you do have a question about a particular topic, you can direct that to us, and we will then interface with the administration and get that answered for you. So you have access to the totality of the university in that sense, but often you'll work through staff to get information.
Mr. Chairman, if I...
Ms. Josephson.
May follow on to that. What role is there with scheduling that those staff play vis-a-vis Regents' inquiries or presentations and the like? Is there a scheduling service?
Mr. Chair,
Mr. Steves.
Yes, there certainly scheduling would be a component of the work that our office would be scheduling briefings or scheduling meetings. I think that though a lot of the information will flow through the public meetings. There's a lot in terms of substance related to the university. There are volumes of information that are developed in conjunction with each of the board's 8 regular meetings per year, and so you will see a lot of information in conjunction with those meetings. If there's information outside of those meetings, then we'll talk about how that information is gathered.
I was thinking more in terms of personal calendars and requests for speaking engagements, and could you come to this, and when you're wearing a region hat, when you're wearing a person hat, and those kinds of things.
Right. We would support regents in their capacity as regents. So if they're being scheduled as a regent at a particular event, or if they are speaking at a particular event and need some bullet points to talk about, we would provide that type of support. We do not provide support outside of that. So, yeah.
Mr. Lerner.
Chair Erickson, I have a question relating to the process for reporting conflicts. Is that an annual process, I would assume, and what exactly do you go through to report that? What are you looking for?
Mr. Chair, in terms of the annual disclosure that you'll need to do, it's a financial disclosure. There's a standard form that you would fill out. It would indicate sources of income, and then there's certain thresholds for assets, and you would disclose that. That would be reviewed by our office and the Office of the General Counsel at the university. We use that as one mechanism for determining whether there could be potential financial relationships that would suggest a conflict, and then we would talk about that. But then outside of that, it's really the regent's responsibility to disclose if there's some kind of a potential conflict.
Thank you.
Do you have concluding remarks, Mr. Steves?
By the way, what I would say, and just as a follow-on to that, if there's anybody who has any questions specifically about a circumstance that you're in, I'm happy to talk with you, or our general counsel, Bill Donahue, would be happy to talk with you even ahead of this process. I mean, if there's anything that you have that's a question, I just want to talk through this. Feel free to contact me, and we can arrange that. Should you be successful in this process, the thing that I would say is this as well. Our team will be there to support you in that onboarding process onto the Board of Regents. It's a daunting task to 1 minute be running for this seat and the next minute to be seated as a regent, which happens immediately, and then to be on deck to start voting on items that are coming to the board, and some of the very first items you're going to be seeing in those first few months will be the budget and setting tuition and voting on some pretty major items for the year ahead. And it can feel very daunting, I think. And so what I would say is we are working hard to design an onboarding experience where you get the information you need as you need it. But you should really look at that entire first year as your first year experience on the board, and that we're designing the whole thing to be your orientation and onboarding to the Board of Regents. As one of the values of having a six-year term is that we can have the luxury of taking a little more time on getting you up to speed with not only the information, but the culture of the board, the relationships you'll need, some of the experiences that you'll need to really be effective as a board member. And so I want it on the front end for you to know that when you get to that election stage, we'll be right there ready to help you navigate that process. Just a few key dates so that should you be successful. One is, during this process, if you're interested and want to observe the Board of Regents, the next regular board meeting is February 12th and 13th. It's held at McNamara Alumni Center. You're welcome to visit and attend any of the committee or full board meetings that you'd like during that time. So following that, March 26th and 27th would be Board of Regents meetings. May 14th, 15th. June 11 and 12, and July 8th through 10th, which is the board's retreat. I give you those dates now because I know if people are starting to plan vacations and things, I just like to get those on people's radar, because really the culture of the board is that attendance is expected at all meetings, and it's very rare that a regent misses a meeting. So those are my concluding comments.
Thank you, Mr. Steves. When is the next board meeting itself?
It's the February 12th and 13th.
Oh, I'm sorry, I was taking notes. You were going to tell them that. So it'll be after. They won't have a chance to go to a board meeting before the meeting of the 10th. Sorry.
Right.
I might just point out, and Regent Lucas, would you join us at the table? Because we're going to do a general question-answer session, and you might be able to answer a couple of the questions. So thank you very much. The one point of interest to the board and to all of you is that that five of the 12 of you, or five of the seats, will be freshmen out of 12 legislators. And so there's we have two regents that have served for 8 years, one for six, one for two for four, and one for two. So this is probably the average tenure after this election will be probably as short as it's ever been in the history of the university. So you will have a steep learning curve and have the opportunity to contribute very quickly. I'll now open up the question to all of you. And again, you're probably asking the gun goes off at 3 o'clock or before when we finish this meeting. That's when the Oklahoma gate goes up. But I think you're probably most interested about these next few days and weeks and how it works. And here you have three people who have done it, and they certainly, those questions can be directed to them. Well, how do I do it? And you've heard a lot about that today, but I think we can serve you all best by asking for their personal experience. Mr. Yost, I'd like
to ask each of the regents that are present today what they consider the most important vote they've taken in their tenure.
Mr. Allen, Regent Allen.
I'm not sure I would say a particular vote, but I would say the most important effort that I think I've been involved in Go back a few years, the university did not do long-range financial planning, and now we do. I think we've got an excellent system of long-range financial planning, and that took some doing and some real pushing from a few of us, and now it's in place, and so I think that's the most important thing that I've been involved in. Not a particular vote, but...
That's what I'd like to know. Thank you so much.
Regent Devine?
I don't want to answer for Clyde, but I would say that the vote that the board took to affirm President Kaler's hiring was probably one of the big votes that's happened, because that only happens in a windowed cycle of 10, 12, 14 years. So it's that was a fairly significant occurrence, because we have a wonderful, wonderful leader. Nothing has really been said this afternoon in this session about President Kaler, but our job is to hire the president and then to support all of his actions. And so each one of the votes that he brings before us really is a very important step in the process of running the University of Minnesota. So to characterize or to try to amplify any one particular area is probably not quite fair in terms of our own individual priorities, because there is a number of them. And we often defer to other board members within for looking for guidance and decisions that are made within the committee structure. Not much was said about the committees, but each one of the regents is serving on at least two, maybe three committees, and then special committees that come up in addition to that. And so your role or your work that takes place there is also part of that process. It's a very integral part of that process. So the votes that are taken at the committee level that are then recommendations to the full board are also incremental in terms of the overall process of making decisions for and on behalf of the university. But I can't really pick on any one particular vote other than to say that all the votes that get to us, it's a fairly involved process to get to a vote, to whatever the item is. And the materials and the presentations and all the things that go with that at the point that it gets to us is significant. And so those votes for whatever that area are, each and every one of them is a very important vote per se. So I won't side with any one other than President Kaler joined the university just before I came on the board. But that certainly would have been my most important vote had I been there at that moment.
Regent Lucas?
Yeah, I'm the new one on the board. I've only been on less than 2 years, almost 2 years. Right. But during my tenure, I would say the most important vote was to support the strategic plan. And in the organizations I've been in the past, sometimes the strategic plan has been pretty pro forma and not too exciting. And I would say that this strategic plan really hit the mark. And when they came to us time after time and talked about rejecting complacency, you know, that was pretty exciting. So I think the work that went into the strategic plan and the vote to support that, and that's the guidepost for the next, for the president, and he's got 5 years to run on it. I think that was the most important vote I took.
I might use the same format and ask a question that probably all of you might be not willing to ask, and I'll ask each of the three regents. Regent Allen, you were elected the first time and then reelected. Regent Devine, you've ran twice, not successfully the first time and successfully the second time. And Regent Lucas, you're just a recent. What was the one thing that you think was most effective in your successful initial campaign?
I guess I would have to say that, you know, I had a long career of working with the legislature. So I knew a lot of the legislators, and in that I would echo one thing that Brian said. As cumbersome as this process is, meeting with 201 legislators, I think it's the best I've seen around the country. It is the best system I've seen. And if you've been involved with it before, that's certainly a big step forward. So that probably was the biggest thing.
And I just want to reiterate what Brian has said, what Clyde just mentioned a moment ago. As imperfect as our system is, it has effectively served the state since before the state became a state. And we are unique in terms of how we do it. And we've we participate in a trade association of fellow regents or chancellors and people from around the country and trustees. And as imperfect as it is, it does work. It isn't about how much money you've given to the institution, or it's not completely tied politically in some of the ways that these other boards are chosen. And we do end up with a balance of a variety of different people, which I think serves the people of Minnesota in a very, very balanced way. We have people from all walks of life, diversity, financial means, and everything else. And I think that that has served the state, and they look historically extremely well. Going back to Jim's original question, I said it, and I think that what served me well in my two election cycles was I treated everybody as a voter all the way through, Republican or Democrat. And that process, I think, is important because I did make friends on both sides of the aisle all the way through. And at the end of the day, I got elected with a combination of both people from both sides of the aisle. It wasn't just one political affiliation. And it does get dicey sometimes, and there's a history, as I'm sure most of you know, of elections where they become just a party line votes kind of a situation. The caucus situation, I got endorsed in the caucus but did not make the slate, so in the first go through. So in that scenario, I did what I thought was the right thing, and I stayed to the end. And you know, I didn't get elected the first time, but the second time, the process served me, and I sit here today. So that's my advice, is treat everybody as a voter.
Is it Lucas?
Well, you probably won't believe this, but I enjoyed the process. I thought it was very affirmative. I'm identified with one of the parties. I was really happy to get to know people from the other party, and I came away from it feeling better about our government, to tell you the truth. I met such thoughtful people that cared on both sides of the aisle, and I actually enjoyed it. My husband did not enjoy it. He left town. But I thought it was invigorating, and I thought in the end it was a positive thing. I believe that the caucus of your district is quite important, and that it's really important to know that you are connected with the people in your district. So I would urge you to make that a priority. But don't dread it. It's fun.
I'd have to add, I thoroughly enjoyed it also, both times.
Yeah, I did too. And I said to one of you before we spoke today, I said the process, win or lose, you in whatever else you're doing, you're affected by the process that you go through, and you'll meet people that you would not have normally have met, and so whatever else you're involved in, you're enriched by the experience of having done it.
And I just like to add, when I went through it, something that took the fear out of it for me was I thought, if I don't get it, I get to join one of the best clubs in town, which are the people that applied for the Board of Regents that didn't get it.
There are a great many people of great high quality that are in that club. You're exactly right. Well, if you're going to be on the Board of Regents, you can't be a shrinking violet, and you have to speak up. So I'm going to go around the room and make sure that you ask a question or put something on the record. I guess that would be Ms. Bender. You already met the test, Mr. Yost. So Ms. Bender, Dr. Bender.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You referred to the voting process. What is the voting process of the Board of Regents? Is it the decision-making process and the philosophy behind that? I'm sorry I'm not aware of that, but it's very important. As 12 different members sitting around the table, is it absolute majority? Is it consensus? Is it two-thirds? What is it? And your own philosophy, does it work?
Well, it's all of the above. the board process is, you know, if it comes down to a vote, it would be a majority of the 12 that would make a decision on a particular issue. In the time that I've been on the board, I can't think of an issue that we've ever gotten close to that kind of a vote. Usually there's a consensus that's generated if the issue has got some ramifications to it. It's worked through that. You try to work through those issues before it actually gets to the vote. The votes, in fact, if I could really characterize voting, it's almost a formality at the end, because really the work, the process, the research, all of what goes into that process of developing whatever the topic is pretty much worked through by the time we vote. And but the process of agreement, I mean, we don't all necessarily agree on all the issues as things come mm-hmm. through, but what you go through is a level of respect, and those that are on the committee that have been vetted through the issues of, you know, to a much further degree or whatever, you respect those people that are involved in that, and you go with that. But you do have the right to speak up, and we do have situations where people, they're not necessarily happy with what the issue is or how they see the vote, and they will speak up and they'll vote against it. And that's what we're here to do. We're to speak up and represent what we think is the best situation.
Ms. Brawl?
I have a very procedural question. When do we think the joint session of the legislature would occur?
First of all, the first bar, the only statutory requirement was that the joint committee meeting of the two committees meet by the 28th of February. That is now the 10th of February. There is no statutory deadline. They will get about it. I'm guessing that the people that will tell you that would be Majority Leader Bach and Speaker Dowd. They will decide when they want to get together and do that, and they'll obviously want to take some time, but maybe not too much time after the joint committee, the slate. I mean, once that's done, there'd be no reason why they couldn't call it fairly soon. I would be surprised if it isn't in February, but that is up to the leadership decision. That's as much as I know, and I think it's been dragged out in some of your cases very late.
April.
I think. So, you know, that's a long time.
Last time it happened, the night before the regent meeting. So Brian came up to me and said, congratulations, and we meet tomorrow at 7:30.
That's all we can tell you now.
Which was actually between committee meetings and the board.
Yeah.
So some people went to the committee, and then they were done at midnight.
Yeah. Right. Mr. Shue.
Do
you
have a question?
Oh, no.
I do, but I've...
Okay. Oh, well, then we'll recognize Ms. Joseph. You have a question of our that will inform our candidates?
The answer is I'd like to connect three dots that have happened here this afternoon. One of them was Senator Bonhoeff's very well-stated comments, in my opinion. There was a piece of it where she said, we're still working on taking away... I heard on taking away the onerousness of needing to meet with all 201 legislators. The second dot is Mr. Steve's comments about representing the entire state as you're serving the Board of Regents. And the third dot is our three sitting regents here in the room saying, this is a positive experience. And they gave multiple reasons for why. I would like to pull those together by saying there is no way in heaven to understand Minnesota in a short time period better than meeting face-to-face with 201 legislators if you're going to be able to get beyond your own life experience. And additionally, to be able to be the kind of person that looks beyond your personal partisan histories and that looks beyond the divisiveness in society that's present. As Regent Lucas said, you realize everybody puts their pants on one leg at a time when you're sitting in those 201 offices, and you realize they're there serving that office for the good of this state. So it's just a really good crucible in which to get ready to serve the Board of Regents. Senator Bonhoeff does not say things without having thought about them. So I would encourage you as you go forward as elected regents or as non-elected regents to think about what do we want this election process to look like going forward. And to potentially weigh in to that discussion.
Mr. Shue, what would you like to know about the process from these expert campaigners?
I'd like to know more about the open meeting practices of the several years ago, there was a situation where they wanted to interview the president, the presidential candidates in private as opposed to in a public meeting, partially because some candidates don't want to be known publicly for obvious reasons. And that, I believe, went to the Supreme Court. And how did that affect the future operations of the board?
Well, I can speak to this one, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Steve.
The Board of Regents, there's a concept you're going to always hear about in related to the Board of Regents, and that's constitutional autonomy. And the board predated statehood, and because of that, at the time that you're talking about, which was in the early 2000s, the board was conducting a presidential search process. And it is true that many candidates wished to remain anonymous during that process until or such time that they would be chosen. The board, I think, was trying to go through that process, and you know, Clyde, I think, would be able to speak to that more directly. But the board, in that instance, asserted that its constitutional autonomy protected it from having to comply with the open meeting law. And the Supreme Court of Minnesota ruled that, in fact, the open meeting law doesn't negatively impact the board's ability to govern the institution, and therefore it is subject to the open meeting law. So although the board had previously operated as if it were subject, this really made it absolute in the sense that the board must now comply with the open meeting law, just like a city council or a county board or any other public entity that you might be familiar with. What that means in terms of operations is that we cannot have regents in groups that would constitute a quorum discussing board business outside of a public meeting. So that means that, you know, as much fun as it would be to get together for drinks and hash something out, that cannot happen in groups of that would constitute a quorum of a committee or of the board. And so we try really hard to impress that upon members. We try really hard to support the board in a way that would allow them to continue to build relationships and get the information that is needed to build consensus while also complying with the open meeting law. And I'll tell you, it's a challenge sometimes.
Dr. Belzer, any questions of our panel for the relevant to the next few weeks of your life?
At the time, Mr. Chair, at the time the vote is taken in the Joint Legislative Committee, are you there observing the vote, or do you just interview and then absent yourselves?
Well, I would recommend you be there. It's a significant event in your life, and it's certainly a public meeting, so I would recommend you be there. I was not there for my first election, and I wished I had been. I watched it on TV, but I wished I had been there. I was there for the second one. And I think wished I'd been there the first.
I was there both times, you know, so I've had a win and I've had a loss. You sit in the gallery, and it's an enjoyable experience. You do want to be there. And my wife was there both times. She flew back from Florida the second time. And she was, of course, glad she flew back the night before just to be with me on that vote. It was very significant.
Yeah, my kids didn't realize it was a big deal until they went and watched the vote. And they went, oh, my God. But it's actually fun. It's hard. You can't keep track because it goes so fast. But it's by voice because the House chamber doesn't have enough lights for joint session, so you can't keep track, but it's interesting.
Mr. Chair, the same with the Joint Legislative Committee? You're there for that vote?
You'll want to be in the gallery. Oh. Yes, you will.
Oh, you're good. That's in a meeting.
You know, to add to the, for one thing, it's a good chance to quickly go downstairs if you've been successful and thank the legislators. Mm-hmm. And if you haven't been successful, again, to go down and thank them for paying attention. And, say whatever else you want to.
Say, walk the stairs no matter what.
Mr. Anderson.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to ask the regents in the room. I'm pretty convinced I'll have a positive experience at this, even if I'm not selected as a regent. I enjoy getting out and talking with people. I'm not shy, but I don't like to knock on a door and peer in. But once I get past that, I generally can find commonality in a matter of a minute. And so I'll visit with them. What I'd like to know, to those of us sitting up here this is a pretty important issue in our lives, becoming a region, whether we win or whether we don't. Do the senators and representatives, I get the impression that they don't see it as important as we do. And I'd like to know, is there a time when we become pests to them and we're better off leaving them alone?
Well,
I never felt like a pest, honestly. I think the ones that I had appointments with were very tuned in to the university and why it's important. And my only advice, honestly, would be nice to the legislative aides because, they control this calendar and they're important.
You know, let me, in responding to this, I would say this. They understand the importance of what their responsibility is in casting the vote. Now, the reality is you won't maybe quite have 201 people the evening of the vote. Usually it's a late afternoon or it runs into the evening, a session. And there are a variety of things. In the last election, we had some weather issues and people didn't get in and, that becomes problematic. And so people that you know are going to vote for you, they don't end up showing up that night, So then that, you're disappointed by their attendance if it's a close vote. But I think they take the duty and responsibility of what they're doing very, very seriously because it is the only time that the House and the Senate meet in one chamber and conduct any business on behalf of the state of Minnesota. The only time that they actually conduct business. They're there for state-of-the-state address, but other than that, it's the only time they conduct business, and it only happens once every 2 years. So I think that they do understand the significance of it. As to being a pest, what we've learned today is you have a very short time window, between now and February 10th. So they've made a decision that they don't want it belabored, the process out. So you're not going to speak to 201 legislators. No matter how hard you try, you're not going to be able to do that. So you've got a pecking order that you've been shared with this afternoon on who you should spend most time with. And I would concentrate on those people. And then you catch people in the hall. A lot of them have their pin, their legislative pin on or whatever. You say hello, shake your hand, introduce yourself. They're not going to know who you are. You can introduce yourself and say, I'm a candidate. I just wanted to shake your hand. And if you walk by their office and you see them in there, you might just, knock, knock, hi, without even walking in, hi, I'm a candidate for the Board of Regents. Be bold.
I never thought they were not anxious to meet, but they are busy people, and you've got to help them get their job done. They were apologetic when they were late, apologetic when they couldn't meet, willing to try to follow up, but I always found them willing to do it. It's also wise to carry a little paperwork with you, and if you've only got 30 seconds with them, to say, well, I'll leave this with you, and a couple things are highlighted. That's a good thing to remember you by, your name, and highlight it, and what have you. That'll help, too.
I might just add a couple things from the chair's perspective, if you could. First of all, the fact that the 10th is set for the joint convention is a godsend to you, but it will put great pressure on those five districts to get together before then because they will want to do that. They really, after the fact, if the slate is really the slate, and I would be surprised if any of the five districts won't try and meet soon, and that's only 20, 21 days, I think, from now. So you're going to have and so I do encourage you, and we will try and talk. I'll try and make the rounds of those conveners, the senior people, to ask them, now that they don't know that the 10th was the 10th, and they are now going to have to deal with finding that time. I'd say that. So that's number one in your next few weeks. And, those of you who are in Murdoch or in Worthington, might as well get a hotel room here, I guess. Somewhat of a disadvantage, even from St. Cloud and Alexandria. The other thing I'd say to your question, Candidate Anderson, was this. You need to remember who these 201 people are. They just did exactly the same thing that you're doing. They went to knock on doors. They went to ask people for their vote. And so they really understand and appreciate that. And while they're busy, you are in this context, if I can use the term, a politician. And they will respect that and understand that they just finished either several months ago or a couple years ago doing that same thing, knocking on doors and being a pest. And they understand that, and they'll give you a lot of slack because of that. So that's it.
I have a quick follow-up question, Mr. Chairman. Sure. On the night of the final vote, whether I win or lose, I have kids in college, and I think it's important that they come and see the government process. Whether I win or lose, I think it's really important for them. Is that date given in advance?
It will be, but it won't be sure. Set. Sometime after the joint convention, the joint committee, then the leaders will start thinking about when they should schedule it. And again, I think they will think about doing it sooner rather than later.
And it's usually been several days ahead they announce it.
Oh yeah, okay. You'll know a week in advance. I would, and we'll encourage them to give as much notice as possible.
My boys enjoyed it. You know, two of my three sons were here. My other one was out of town. But
that's my point. My kids, win or lose, I think it would be a good day for them to see the legislature in action. Yeah.
Well, the real drama is actually, I shouldn't say the real drama, but there's a great deal of drama at the joint committee, because that's where the slate is put up together. Not that people on the slate haven't lost, but it's a pretty good indicator. Mr. Larraway.
Just a quick question, Mr. Chair. I'd like to ask the regents, if you've had a chance to see your associates, other regents, and that, what do you consider real key qualities that they have, or what do you admire in some of the things that some of your associates have?
Well,
what makes a good regent?
I think, number one, you should be a team player. You know, it's a team, and you shouldn't push your own agenda. You should be willing to be part of the team, and so I value that, and I think the board that we have right now is really good at that. So I appreciate that.
Yeah, I would say that this board is one of the more harmonious boards we've had. You know, there's been years where there's been divisions within the board, and that clearly has not been the case here for really an extended period of time. And I think that that's important, and that requires effort. And so I think part of it is talking to other board members, getting their opinions on things, emails, phone calls. There's a lot of two-minute stand-up calls, remembering that we're a public entity. So, you know, a private board can deliberate on a lot of issues, you know, behind closed doors, which we don't have the luxury to do. And it's important to understand, you know, where people stand on certain issues. So I think that the commitment of time to be able to interact is a very important one.
Yeah, I think hard work to keep track of what's happening in the world of higher education. You've got to be aware of what's going on as a framework. You've got to do your homework on particular issues before the board. Those are really important things, hard work and awareness. We have a lot of respect and teamwork, which means sometimes we know how to have a disagreement harmoniously, too.
Dr. Simonson.
Mr. Chair, this is probably more of an operational question in the board than a part of the process of getting to the board, but you mentioned we're there to support the president. I certainly agree with that and understand that. And how much opportunity to really critique and challenge some of the, for example, the budget. I read the fiscal year 15 budget and really liked a lot of what I saw in that, the way President Kaler talked about holding the cost on tuition, his focus on health care, his support for the arts and literature, which I'm also an advocate of. So I really like that. But then where he's looking at costs, some of the things like administrative costs and that kind of thing, is it truly an administrative reduction versus reshuffle? And how much opportunity do you get to challenge that type of thing?
A whole lot. Along with long-range financial planning, we've done a lot of work the last few years on examining what it costs us to really carry out every part of the organization. And there's some real fundamental work that's been done on that. I think it's may lead the country in the analysis that's been done. So there's a lot of that. I'd expand a little on the notion that we're there to support the president. Yes, we are by the time he finally brings recommendations, but we're also there to give guidelines and vibes about how we think things are being put together to eventually come to us. So there's that shaping of things early on. And doing that well is one reason we don't have much controversy when the final reports come in.
You know, the university came under a lot of criticism here prior to President Taylor coming aboard, and shortly afterwards there was the Wall Street Journal articles, and some of it was not factually correct, as it turned out. But the work that the board has done, and then in part asked the staff, the senior administration, to work on layers and spans studies that have been done to really look at what we're doing. We've cut $90 million of administrative expense from the university's budget. And that, we're in the process. It's a cycled process, but we're above target right now in terms of what we're doing on that. And what Clyde said about, leading the country, there are a lot of people that are looking at how we've gone about the business of addressing some of these issues of the runaway costs of higher education and the runaway costs of tuition. We've done a lot of work there, and it's, pick and shovel, really get into the reports, get into the numbers to understand what it is. Our goal, our job, is to be strategic in terms of what we're doing. But it also, from my standpoint, when you attend events and you go and you listen to constituents and employees of the university and so on, you learn a lot about what's going on within the institution. And I think that's really the commitment. So by the time you get to the vote, you're fairly well educated about what really needs to be done.
Could I add one thing to that? Tom said triggered my thought. We've talked a lot about we need in higher education generally to recapture the narrative. Higher education has become sort of a whipping boy in recent years for lots of other problems. And it gets talked about without a lot of real analysis. I'll just give you one example. From the time that most of us were in college, or maybe I'll have to revise my figures because you're all younger than I am. But from the time you were in college, you almost have to take today's dollars and divide them by six to compare them with what we spent. In other words, the value of a dollar today is about one-sixth of what it was when you were in college. And if you start to say, well, higher education is now costing us this huge amount, that's in nominal dollars. That's not in real dollars. And have there been some increases in real dollars? Sure they have. And a lot of them are explainable. But you've got to recapture the narrative and start to talk about the real cost of higher education and the real value of it in today's world. So that's one task I lay out in front of all of you. We're doing our best with it. Please continue that work.
Thank you. Mr. Beeson, I encouraged each of the candidates here to ask at least one question of this panel, so I'm not going to leave you out of that. You have the chance to talk to these folks about whatever question you'd like to ask them.
Oh, I have so many things I'd like to know. Well, I won't ask a question, but I will just say it's been interesting listening to the lines of questions that all of you have. They're the same types of questions that we all had when we ran. And one of the observations I would have from the moment that you're elected to when you start is expect to be surprised. There'd be some areas that we're quite highly developed in, and that will surprise you. And there's other areas that we need a lot of work. And these will tend to be in sort of opposite directions of your current opinion, because opinions are based on impressions and headlines. And as you sort of do the work, and the work is done at committee, and the work's done during the year, so the budget hearing is important, but it's anticlimactic compared to the hard work that needs to go on the rest of the year. So it's a working job. It's a lot of fun, but one has to really focus on and pick a couple of areas of interest and stay with those topics.
Thank you. Well, since that clock is 5 minutes fast, we have just a few minutes to end on time at 3 o'clock. I want to thank you all. We wish you, those of us here at the RAC, the very best of luck. We encourage you that in this process, in these next at least 21 days until that joint meeting, it's a two-way street when you talk to legislators. You represent Minnesota in your relative expertises, and take the opportunity to inform them as well as them inform you. They will value that, and I've heard reports that many of the discussions, they spend more time picking your brain about your background and what you think of the university. So you get to be a proponent of the university. You get I'm sure the existing regents would love to have a phalanx of all of you coming to lobby the university over the next 6 months. So take the opportunity to speak on behalf of your love of the university, your agenda for it, your willingness to serve, but listen to what they have to say and carry that back into your service as a regent or after when we pick your brain about it. So with that in mind, I want to thank you for doing it. You will, I believe, enjoy the next the gate goes up now, if you will. Several of you have appointments right now, I know at 3 o'clock, and I encourage you to do it, and most of all, enjoy the ride. Thank you.
Thank you for doing this. Thank you.